All right. Welcome to this webcast on Android programming. My name is Brett Thomas. I'm one of the TFs for CS50 today, or this semester. Today we're going to take you through for about an hour and introduce the Android cell phone operating system. So I think it's a great idea to work in your final project and why I think it's possible that you'll be potentially using an Android phone pretty often in the coming years. So we're going to spend about an hour today learning about the Android operating system. First, we're going to go through some of the basics. We're going to talk about what is Android. If you're just watching this for fun, curious about what this thing is that you've heard so much about that has to do with cell phones, at the very least, you'll come out of this presentation understanding that. Also, look at how applications are composed and exactly what components you need to write if you're going to write an application. Next, we're going to look at different capabilities that an Android application has, and equally important, we're going to look at what an Android application cannot do as well, because we wouldn't want you to get started trying to code something and then realize that it's impossible on Android cell phone today. And then finally, we're going to introduce a preferred integrated development environment that runs off Eclipse. It's a plugin for Eclipse that Android has released. And it's our preferred method, my preferred method of coding Android applications. It's the one that Google cites the most as well. So I do think it's the best option for you out there. And then lastly, we're going to look at some example code. I just run a quick Hello World application, look at a couple of other things that you can do with Android. And so you'll leave the seminar today, hopefully being able to code just the most basic Android applications. So what is Android? I don't know if you remember a couple years ago, people were always talking about a G phone that was going to come out. It was going to be a big competitor to the iPhone and really turn the cell phone market upside down. Well, that did not happen. Google did not release a phone, but what they released instead was an operating system. And this is the operating system they released was Android. And Android is an open source operating system meant to run on mobile phones. What that means is that any cell phone company out there, or excuse me, any cell phone manufacturer, so the companies like Motorola and BlackBerry that actually make the hardware that comprise a cell phone, are able to use this Android operating system for free at their will. And anybody out there at the same time can code applications for the Android operating system. And so I don't know what kind of cell phone you have right now, but there's only one Android cell phone on the market right now. It's called the T-Mobile G1. And many more are in development right now. The other cell phones are planned, but right now there's only one. So if you don't have the T-Mobile G1, your cell phone probably isn't as accessible as the Android phone. And so why did they come out with this phone? It was just for that reason, to try to gain some accessibility. It provides a common operating system for many different manufacturers. And so Verizon or another AT&T, another cell phone provider, can have a bunch of different cell phones from a bunch of different mobile phone manufacturers and still run the same code, still have the same capabilities in all those phones. It's also, many... Well, one of the other reasons that Android came out or was released was that there's so much new cell phone technology now. Obviously, the 3G networks that the Android phones run on now being the best example, that many mobile phone operating systems are really being outdated. And so a good example is the Motorola Razr, which 2 years ago was the hottest phone on the market, now is really being one-upped by these other phones that can run really neat, integrated high-speed internet applications. And so a lot of these phone companies are needing to upgrade to a higher level operating system, and Android's an answer for many of them. Finally, Android, one of the major, business reasons that it was released is that it was not released by Apple for the iPhone or Microsoft as a add-on to Windows Mobile. And so many developers and users actually prefer an open system that Android provides over those two big companies. And then finally, Android. The goal of Android is it makes software on a cell phone more accessible, and to make software really a big reason for why you buy and why you use a cell phone. Currently, most people I think only use cell phones for calling, for phone calls, obviously, for texts and some other minor uses. But a lot of people out there think that different capabilities and new software is going to be increasingly important on phones as you move forward over the next years and next decades. And if that's true, then Android has a very very powerful argument for why it's going to be a very prominent cell phone operating system, because it really does provide that accessibility that you need to achieve scale on all of your different projects. So why should you all code Android operating system, or excuse me, Android applications? First reason I would argue is that it's very easy. I think it is much, much easier than BlackBerry applications, and certainly a little bit easier than iPhone applications. Also, Android mobile phones are becoming increasingly prevalent. The G1's selling really well, and I think a couple other providers, Motorola included, are releasing some other phones shortly. Also, if you're interested, there's a official Google-sponsored developer challenge this winter for the Android phone. It's the second instantiation of this developer's challenge they've had. And so if you want to try to code an application, enter it, maybe win some money. I think the prize is a couple $100,000 split a couple dozen ways. And so it's good money if you want to take on an extra ambitious project. So what code is actually in an Android phone? Well, the whole phone's written in a specialized version of Java called Java Mobile Edition. And actually that Java Mobile Edition is further specified just for the Android operating system to make it a little bit quicker and also exactly specified for those features. Of course, we haven't learned Java and CS50 yet, and so the elephant in the room right now is this object-oriented programming concept that we've just briefly touched on with JavaScript, but really haven't been able to dive into extensive detail with. It's a very encompassing topic that if you do try to code an Android application, you will have to learn. And so we'll touch on that briefly today, but this presentation isn't meant to introduce you to object-oriented programming. It's really meant to introduce you to how you can code an Android application. And then if you do choose to do so, you'll see some of the capabilities that you want to do require pretty in-depth object-oriented programming, and you'll have to watch the other tutorials on that. Just quickly, I guess I'll introduce you a little bit to what kind of actual lines of code you're going to see in an Android phone. First, the user interface is the most important thing to understand, because that's what users actually use. That's how the phone is, how your application is communicated to people. And the phone, I don't know if you've ever actually used an Android phone, but it's very easy to switch between screens. And so you can easily switch from your browser screen to your media player screen. And those screens are called activities. Activity is a class. That's the main, the main user interface class. An activity doesn't have to have a user interface defined for it. It can also be, for example, a song playing in the background that you never actually see because it's just audio. But an activity instance, an activity object, can be playing a song. Main components of your program, really the core objects that are going to be at work, are all activities. When you narrow down a little bit onto exactly how the user interface works, you run across this subclass of activity called a view. And so a view is just some sort of visual interpretation that you can get in the phone. So a button, it's a touchscreen, so a button is just... It is just an image. Buttons, images, different. You can actually have a browser window come up as a view, because if you want to integrate a browser window into your application, you can have a browser view class. And so views are really, if you're trying to code a game or something that's intensely visual, that is not web-based, I should mention, you're going to be dealing very, very closely with views. Finally, actions are really the how these different interface components communicate with each other. I want to just quickly draw your attention to a couple called intent and intent filter. Classes called intent and intent filter that are very, very important for you to know. First off, intent is what allows you to move between activities. And so as I said, really the core components of your program are going to be activities. And if you want to switch between them, so for example, to go from that browser to the media player, you're going to have to call an intent to run that. Again, that's a class, and so you're going to have to instantiate an intent, and then tell that intent to manipulate the activity or to switch from one activity to another. There's also this intent filter subclass of intent. An intent filter sets permissions on what intents can and can't be called on your program. So, for example, if you design a new media player and your program's going to be playing music, maybe you are going to allow the phone program application to sort of break into your program and tell the music to stop playing whenever the phone rings. However, you probably don't want a brick breaker game to just randomly come in and be able to shut off your phone, and so you can shut off your music. And so you can define this intent filter subclass to explain exactly to your program what other applications and what other applications can and can't access your program. So sort of the corollary to that is that intent filter is also used to tell different activities within your program whether or not they can communicate with each other. So I won't go off and give a bunch of examples, but if you do want to set permissions within your program as well, that's how you do it in an Android phone. Finally, broadcast receiver and notification manager are also very important if your application is going to scale beyond just a simple hardware application, or excuse me, a simple simple operating system application. If you want to be notified of anything else going on in the phone, good example is that phone call example. If somebody's calling in and you want the program to be notified whenever a phone is ringing, you have to instantiate a broadcast receiver, and that will listen for that external event that you're looking for. Finally, notification manager is also very important to look at. That allows you to have your program notify other applications about what's going on in within your program. So just to think of an example off the top of my head, if your program is a game, and say you want, whenever you win the game, you want another program to be notified. You want another game maybe to pop up in case the user wants to switch between games. Well, you have to add this win action to your notification manager by instantiating a new notification manager class and putting that on the phone's hardware. Finally, two other classes that you need to know about are service. Service is what runs in the background if your program's not actually on and there aren't any activities in use at the moment. Good example is if your program's going to continuously check a web page to look for new data, to read an RSS feed. You run that as a service instead of an activity because it's much more efficient. And then finally, content providers are what is equivalent to storing a file on the hard drive. And within a content provider, you have to specify the exact interface that you want to tell the phone which other applications can and cannot communicate with the content from your program that's stored there. I guess what makes up an Android application, diving a little bit deeper, what's actually this install package that we're going to put on your phone? As I said, the phone is coded primarily in Java, and usually one activity is reserved for each Java file. And so obviously there are going to be many different functions, a main function usually in each one of those. A main function in one, I apologize. A primary function that's called within each of those files. But you want to split up your activities into different files because activities is such a good way to abstract away different parts of your program. If your program is very complicated, that it just makes too much sense to put them all in different Java files. You also have a resource file in your program. This is conventionally called r.java. And this file is a series of definitions that explains how the different files, which they, I guess it knows as resources, communicate with each other. And so, if at one time you're going to call from your main program a different file that's managing a different activity, you have to register that in the resource file, or else it won't know where to look at all. Finally, we'll get to this in a minute, but there is a really neat way to display visual information on an Android phone in an XML format, which obviously we've learned in detail over the past couple weeks. And so you can include XML files as well. And when we get to learning about that Eclipse development environment, there's a really easy way to abstract your whole visual interface into XML, which is pretty sweet. And then finally, as I said, object-oriented programming is a really new topic to y'all. I just wanted to quickly point in the direction of a few different terms that you really need to understand, because these terms are essentially what make up an Android application, beyond the file extensions. And so within the Java files, there are many nested classes. And remember, we compared a class in JavaScript to a structure in C. And so nested classes, they're just classes and subclasses and subclasses. The best example is that activity and view example that we talked about earlier. So an activity is a big screen, and then a view is just a button that goes on a screen. So a view is a subclass of activity. And many complicated programs will have even dozens of nested classes, and those are all just subclasses of other subclasses and so on. Finally, workspace is equivalent to a folder. That's just where you store all of the different files in your program. It's possible to have two programs and then one workspace if you want to do that. Usually you just have one workspace per program, though, if there isn't heavy communication between the two. That's really just a development tool. The Eclipse requires you to code from a workspace so it knows easily which files to link with each other. Finally, packages are groups of files that usually are organized by really prime function of a program. In almost all the programs I've written ever seen, there's just one package per program. It's possible to have multiple packages per program, but that makes the installation kind of silly and crazy. So I'd say unless you really, really need to and find some compelling reason why not to, just make all of the files in your program in this one package. And finally, this other sort of foreign keyword we've seen pretty often now is called namespace. That's just a dictionary that defines how the API, the different APIs that make up Android, communicate with your program. And so if you're going to use the user interface, you're going to have to understand the namespace and include the namespace within your Java file that defines exactly what all those different things mean. And so what is a view and what is an activity? But as I said, you don't need to understand all that right now. That will come along as you learn Java, as you code these programs. So we have next. Just a little bit more about the XML user interface. So these view elements can actually be nested into subclasses of different views. So you can have one big notifier come up with three different buttons on it. And that big notifier you will define as a subclass called a view group. And so if you see over to this diagram on the left, you'll see one view group can have three different options come off of it, and one of those nested options can be a separate group of other options. So this is really pretty powerful because you can see these diagrams look very familiar to the DOM diagrams that we saw when we were studying JavaScript and learning how to parse web pages. And the reason that's so great is because it really makes the interface accessible from, you don't have objects flying all over the place doing a really complicated program. You can really abstract everything into a nice XML format. And that's what this XML abstraction does. And so literally in this Eclipse IDE that we're going to suggest, you have... You can code certain things, like you can code the the user interface in terms of Java objects. But anytime you code a Java object, it actually also generates an XML file for you. And anytime you want to add just a new button or make quick edits to your program, it's much easier just to come in and make a new tag, a new view element tag, and in the XML file. And so, again, that's one other thing that we suggest. And we'll talk about that more as we look at the IDE. Finally, views have certain subclasses that are attributes that define exactly how the views communicate with each other. Because if you think about it, you can't just have, say, tell the phone, put 5 buttons on the screen. You have to tell them where the buttons go and how they interact with each other. And so that's what this diagram on the right shows. Excuse me. It shows how the layouts communicate with views, and layouts are subclasses of views. Layouts really just define, again, how the views interact with each other. There are different types of layouts. Here you can see a linear layout, which describes it's a layout that's when all the view items are in the same direction. So if view items aren't moving all over the place, you can just make it a simple linear layout. A relative layout is a layout that is when the view items are relative to each other. And so if one view item will move to one side of the screen, it'll take other view items along with it. Excuse me, view elements. So that's a little bit more complicated to code, but it is possible, and it does make this XML abstraction pretty powerful. Finally, each of these subjects have each of these subclasses have different parameters that you have to learn. So I think the user interface on Android actually seems right now, it must seem pretty complicated, but when you get down to it, it's much easier than than user interfaces on even a C program. This is actually one of the easiest user interfaces I've ever worked with, just because it's so easy to abstract it right to an XML XML layout. All right. Finally, I guess to me, the most important two things to understand about a mobile phone application are the user interface, which we just talked about, because obviously that's how users understand what's going on, what your program is actually trying to do, and they communicate with your program, and also the connectivity. The main advantage of a mobile phone is that it is so portable, and it has this cell phone signal coming into it at all times. And there are a couple ways to utilize this network on an Android phone, and on all cell phones, actually. First is the web browser. Android, as far as I've been able to tell, has a pretty good web browser. I don't own an Android phone, but I went into the T-Mobile store and played with it for a while, went to a bunch of different websites, and I didn't have any problems with the web browser. And that's a very good thing. I don't know if any of you use BlackBerrys, but BlackBerry's web browser, at least until this latest touchscreen phone, is pretty bad. And so I think that the general consensus is that Android's web browser, it is Google Chrome, Google web browser, is at the level of the iPhone browser. And so you can really go to almost any web page from an Android phone. Again, they are all the ones that are released yet, that have been announced or released yet so far, use this 3G network. And so the browser is very powerful. And so if the program you're trying to write is really primarily connectivity based and could be implemented as a browser, as a website, and so be accessed all the time from a browser. That's one thing to think about. They have different standards for what kind of websites look best on mobile phones, and so you really have to make a decision if you are making a program that's based primarily on communication with outside the cell phone, whether or not it's best to implement that as a browser program, so just a web page, or as actually a program that sits on the hardware of your phone. If you do, there's a really easy to use connectivity package called Android.webkit. The saving grace with this is that there are no permissions issues, and so you can have a program run in the background and access the internet from your phone at all times. And you can't do that on a BlackBerry yet. I actually don't know if you can do that on an iPhone. But iPhone has many more permissions issues outside of that anyways. And so there's a pretty powerful package to access any websites that you want. This means it has a couple implications. First is that AJAX is useful and is very useful and easy to implement on a server side for a program that accesses a certain web page pretty often. So if you need to update your phone often, it's often a good idea to use AJAX and update an XML file constantly. Finally, I guess we already touched on permissions, and we can move on from connectivity. But just do remember that it is important to differentiate between browser applications and hardware applications early on. And browser applications obviously are much easier to code, and for many uses, they actually are just as good and just as easy as a hardware phone. So I guess with that, we'll take a quick 5-minute break, come back, and talk about the development environment that we're going to suggest you use for Android. So see you in a minute. So welcome back. Thanks for sticking around. As I said, now we're going to dive in a little bit to the nuts and bolts of how to code an Android application. What you're looking at right now is a development environment known as Eclipse. It's a free open source development environment, very popular. Eclipse and NetBeans are probably the two most popular Java platforms. And Eclipse is definitely my favorite. The difference between Eclipse and the nice.harvard thing that we were using before is that, in cloud.cs50.net. I'm sorry, I forgot about that. Of course, this is not located in the cloud. This is located right on your computer. So a couple implications there. First, make sure you back up all your files, because if Eclipse happens to kill your computer, we don't want to lose all of your code. And it also means that whereas the C libraries and the definitions of PHP and all the different languages we've had have been located on the cloud, you haven't had to worry about that. When you start coding on your actual machine, you have to install the languages themselves, in addition to this cool little interface that Eclipse provides. So you have to go to the Sun website and download the Java software development kit. The good tutorials on that, we'll put that on the PDF accompanies the presentation. You also have to download Eclipse, obviously. And then finally, a plugin for Android that comes right from the Android website. And that plugin is what provides the specific Android libraries and namespaces, and also the emulator that we're going to see right now that lets you actually simulate what would happen if your program was running on an actual phone. So if you take a look up here, I have a Hello World program in here right now, and I'm going to run it because I want to show you what the simulator looks like. And so if you need to run your program, the way to do it is to go up to this Run dialog up top and click Run. And there are a bunch of different ways you could run this program. You can run it as a Java applet or application that's equivalent to a script or a program on your computer, or you can choose this Android application, nifty device that they've installed for us. And I'm going to wait for that to load. And as we're waiting for it to load, we're actually going to recreate this Hello World file for ourselves, so you can see how a file is started from the beginning. I think one of the biggest abstractions to overcome as you're coding these programs is to understand exactly what this organization is of Java files and XML files and install manifests and everything. And so I think really starting from the beginning is important. So as we go through this tutorial, which is also available online at the Google website, definitely press pause and stop if you have any questions or if something doesn't make sense, because we're really going through the basics right now, the nuts and bolts that you have to understand if you're going to abstract to a different level and be able to code these complicated projects. So first thing we start off with is, trying the multiple screen now again, want to make sure that we have everything the right way so I can copy paste text. All right. Anyways, so our first step is, what are we doing? We go up to File and New and Project. And we're creating a new project. And see, there are a few options we can choose from here. In case you're interested, BlackBerry programming also you can also code very easily on BlackBerry off of Eclipse, and so I have options there for both of them. But this time we want to start an Android project. These fields that you're looking at here are very important. First off, the project name is pretty simple. That's just like the name of the folder that you're going to be working from in this particular project. So we're going to call this CS50 Seminar. And then the package name is a unique name of the particular package that this project is going to be involved in. So if you remember, there are first workspaces that have which is a folder where you put all the stuff dedicated to one program, and then workspaces is where you put all your Android programming. Then we have this project, which is sort of one subpart of a program, and then it's always located in a package. And a package is, again, sort of that combination of the different Java files that you're using. And so they have a pretty unique naming system. No capital letters and all dots, and so we're going to call this com for community dot, I'm going to say Brett P. Thomas dot hello. And because, again, that's actually, maybe we'll name it CS50 Seminar, just not to get confused. And that no one will ever see that package unless you break open the hardware, the phone, and try to extract some bits from within the operating system. That package name is meant to uniquely identify the package. It's very important that you use a unique URL, or else all your programs are going to get confused. So make sure to initialize that at the beginning. Finally, the activity name is, again, this project is located in a particular package. But if we want to call just this project, we have to be able to uniquely identify it by its activity. So in this case, we're going to call it again. Maybe we'll just call it Seminar to differentiate between the project name. And then application name, finally, is something we can change later. Obviously, it's how the application will show up to the user. And so we'll call this, hey there, CS50, capitalized CS50. That's important. Okay, so now we have our project finalized. And if we look in here, there are a bunch of different files that we can look at. We open up the Android library quickly. You have this android.jar file. Look at all those functions. Those are all the different APIs that you can use for an Android phone. If you're curious, look through all of those, look through the ones that look interesting. Look up their definitions in the documentation. Where we're going to put most of our stuff is in the source file and in the resources file. And so, SRC obviously being source. Right now, there's nothing there you see besides the seminar.java file and an r.java file that we explained that it's just a resource file earlier. So in this case, let's open both of those up. And excuse me, I have these files open from earlier. I'm just going to X them out. And it gives us this code. This is code that's initialized by the when we use that little start form at the beginning. And you should be able to look through that. And if it's not all intuitive, you can definitely just look up what the functions mean. Because if I'm going to point out one important thing is that at override in the middle. At is an indicator that you use in Android programming to explain when a function is called. And so that at override just it indicates whenever this particular file is called, that's an override. The file is being opened, and so this is the one that you, the function that you run, that public void on create. And so, remember the different Java files will be opened up at different times, and that's why you need to distinguish exactly which files to use. So, moving on, we've created a project, and we have all of our stuff. Now, we need to sort of edit the interface a little bit to try to manipulate some of these functions here, just to make them actually do something. And so, first thing we're going to do is I'm actually going to copy some code in from Google. And so, you see, we're this public class seminar extends activity is that's something that's just the definition of the class that we're using, the main class in this program. If you open this up, you see that you have these import functions. We actually we do need both of these. This is the activity and the bundle files are useful for us because we are calling different activities, again, different instances of a screen, at least one in this case, in the Hello World example. And the bundle just indicates that it is connected to the operating system. And so, listen, and we're also going to import one other because, excuse me. Oh. This text view, semicolon, of course. A text view object is an example of one of those subclasses of views. And so I said a view can be a button, some text, can be a browser instance or anything. In this case, a text view is just a string that's going up in plain text on your program. And it's located within this widget subdirectory, but we don't want to include or import the entire Android operating system onto our phone, or the entire widget gallery. We only want, in this case, to import the one text view object. Excuse me, the one text view class, because otherwise we wouldn't. Although it is in the namespace, otherwise the program wouldn't have the correct functions to call to actually implement one of those text views. It would return an error, and not know what was going on, and so. That's that, and I'm just going to copy over some text right here. Excuse me. And sorry, I'm still getting confused by this. The two monitors. You see, first off, we have two lines right here. I'm going to highlight them. First line declares an instance of text view. Call it TV. We do that the same way we did in PHP, the same old classic object-oriented program we've seen. In this case, just declaring a new text view. And then you have that this argument. That means that the text view is being instituted on this particular activity. Because you see, seminar is a subclass of activity. That's what that extends keyword means, you'll see. And so you have to call a view on a particular activity, or else the view will have nowhere to be displayed. It won't have a screen to be displayed on. So that's what this first line does. And then the second line just calls a method that is part of text view. That's one of those methods that included up top at the import. And that method describes exactly what text is going to be displayed. In this case, it's copied over as Hello Android, but we will rename this Hello CS50. Excuse me. We want to set the content view. Don't pay attention to this for a second. We're going to set the content view as TV. And this is a valid Hello World program now on an Android phone. See if we can. Notice our, and I told you I started the emulator earlier for the other file that's exactly the same. This is what the emulator looks like. That's actually a T-Mobile G1 right there. It runs on a virtual machine, and so it copies over the operating system. And that if you put that code in a program on your phone right now, it would look just like that. It would not be very exciting, but that is a Hello World application. I messed up the text in the other file. The reason it doesn't say, hey, CS50, is because obviously I called it from the last file that created. The reason we can't, unfortunately, it's kind of a pain to call this emulator regularly, though, is that it does run pretty slowly. It runs very slowly on dual-core processors, which is what I happen to be using. I'm actually not sure why. I think it must be because they can only use one of the cores. But the emulator can be a pretty big pain. So it's not a perfect environment. But you can see now that this is really the interface that you want to be coding in. And actually, this emulator can get pretty fun if you get up to some neat, more complicated programs. It can do most of the thing that a regular Android phone can. So close it up and unlock it, and it's being slow now. But anyways, I'm gonna close that for now so we get our computer back and talk a little bit more about that XML user interface abstraction that is so crucial to the Android phone. So right now we've written we've written this program in Java as in object form. But as we said, there's this XML layout that's much, much easier. And so I'm actually gonna flip back over here now to let's remove this because that's old. Just take a look quickly at what r.java looks like. This is the organization file. It says do not modify, but you can modify it. You need to modify it quite often. That's just from the simple hello world example. And we won't talk too much about what that means at the moment, just because it can. Unfortunately, we don't have the time right now. But you'll see that on the different tutorials. I'll point out the resources a little bit later. But on the different tutorials that you have for different types of actions that you want to take and intents that you want to write, you'll have to edit this file accordingly. And it's actually pretty it's pretty self-explanatory in most of the function definitions. Where are we going? We're going back to in the resources folder, which again we said is sort of connected to the source folder. This is something that the Android plugin to Eclipse does on its own, which is really nice. It will automatically generate this main.xml file you see right here. And so two things you can do. First, you can actually edit this. This is a virtual implementation of what the screen would look like without all the back-end operating system complications that makes the computer run so slowly. So if you want to just check out different backgrounds, I don't have any installed there right now. Do I? I guess nothing exciting. Nothing that'll make it go right now. But you can change the theme. If you just want to check out the user interface, there's some pretty cool capabilities here. But if you go, instead of at the layout interface, over to the actual code, you'll see XML, as we said. And this XML you can edit the same way you would with Java, except it's much easier. And so I'm going to copy over some XML. Excuse me. So instead of that text view, what they did, we are going to copy over a new text view. Don't need this line. And we actually don't need this XML declaration either, because you can see that it was defined in the linear layout, which is actually comes before the text view. This XML declaration right here, you can see the new object that we, excuse me, the new, the new attribute that we added, the text view, element, not attribute, has three attributes. First is this layout width and layout height. Those are obviously just the dimensions of the screen. Of course, right now there's only one Android phone, so that's not too relevant. But that fill parent indicator right there just shows that it's the full dimensions of the screen. Then you have another attribute called Hello Android right there, which we edited ourselves to say other stuff. And that text view element right there that I've just highlighted does the same thing as the much more complicated Java code right there. And so say you wanted to add a second text view, you just, I'm going to go back to main.html, copy over the exact same thing. And now we can make one a hello CS50 as well. XML, of course. And you'll see the exact same thing in this hello world example that I already had in the computer. The resources main.xml. Opening up the last one. You'll see it looks just the same. As text view with a nested within the linear layout subclass that we described. And so that's a hello world example. I guess if there's any advice about using that emulator, it's that it's not that easy, it's not that efficient. And so definitely don't get too used to testing every single function and layout individually. Since you have this nice XML abstraction, you can just keep adding tags and everything, be pretty confident it's going to work. You don't have to worry about functions calling each other and objects and worrying about subclasses and stuff like you would in Java. So I really cannot emphasize enough how useful the XML is here. That's it for the IDE for now. I'm going to minimize this in case we need to come back to it. And for the rest of the seminar, we're going to talk a little bit about some different code examples and show you how to use some of the resources that are available. I'm going to move this over to the other screen. The first one I wanted to go over is this Notepad example. See, we're at the code.google.com page for Android, and has in the samples directory. So this is the sample code that's available to you. And the sort of the classic example that everyone always gives is like a cool Android implication is this Notepad. This Notepad program, it's really easy because it's just text, and it's a simple text. It's a simple XML layout, obviously. So this is what we're going to look like here. We're going to have a Notepad, and so one activity is on the left, that Notepad activity, and then the Edit Note activity on the right is another activity that's called as an intent when you click on the grocery list example. So let's nest a little bit into that code and see how exactly it does that and how it looks in the XML file. This is a good example because this whole program is coded in one XML file. That's obviously not what you want to do, but it shows you front to back how this works. So without actually even focusing on what the actual code says here, take a look at how much that does resemble a traditional XML page that we've been looking at. I'm just going to highlight some of this. Highlight this tag right here. And you can, file is available in the PDF, this link, and so if you can't see it as well in the video, feel free to just tab over to the actual Google website. See, this is an intent filter element. And as you said, that's a subclass of view. And so it's a subclass of activity. And so it's not that easy to code in Java. But this intent filter element right here has has a few different actions, what they call them. They each have a different name. And what that just indicates is that view, edit, and pick are all able to be called, or excuse me, to call this element, or excuse me, this program, and which we defined up top as the head filter. And you see this data Android mind type. Just want to make sure I get the syntax right. Yeah, so back at the end here, this vnd.google.note, that's what what we're naming our program. And so that just indicates that this program can be accessed by view, edit, or pick. And so that's an example of how this XML is so useful, again. And see if there's anything else we want to look at here. Right. So I guess this activity element as well, it's quite big. It shows you exactly how a single activity can be implemented. We call it note editor, and if you go back to the other screen, if you go back to the other screen, you see the edit note is one activity, and notepad is another. So this has to sort of indicate somewhere that that the regular notepad can call it, and so that's what this line does down here. And good thing about this is that these code examples are available all over the Android Developer Center, and so you're welcome to. Obviously, these are simple examples, and so they can come very helpful as you move along coding. Definitely utilize all of the sample code here. Stuff with Notepad. Notepad's a fun example to understand front to back because it really gives a good. It doesn't call any other programs, and it's one of those things that you should. It's just nice to be able to understand because it does everything you need to do within one program, but doesn't use any external implementations. We also want to talk quickly about this resources example here. Again, this is all, it's linked on the PDF, and so feel free to look from the from the other or from the actual Google site as you're watching the video. Take a look at these few lines right here. You can get a sense of how this works. This resource sample obviously is not implementing a user interface. But it is an activity subclass. As you can see, it extends activity. So at the override, I apologize. I'm looking at the wrong one. This one does. This one gives you a text view. What's the other one? Oh, all right. Never mind. I guess I opened up the wrong link. Anyways, really quickly, we'll explain what this does. This just sets the new text of a text view where it gets from some other external resource. Remember, we called the content of the program that's saved on the hard drive. And so that's what this context.getResources function does. Method does. It is called context is this, and so it's the actual program that you're running, and so all of the content that is associated with this program on the hard drive is available now from this context variable. But I apologize. That's pretty intuitive. You don't have to. You can pick that up a little bit as you go along. And finally, I wanted to point out one other important aspect of the documentation, which we said is the connectivity. And this cache manager is a particularly important class. And so I wanted to point out a couple of the methods. If you These cache objects are actually data pieces that are stored in the cache as the program's running. And so you'll call from a website, access data from some website, store it in the cache, and then you'll have to access it somehow. And so you can see start and end cache transaction is how you communicate with the cache. And you have to have the particular position in the cache, the particular directory, and that's what these get cache file-based directories are. And so I know when I was coding Android applications, I used this this class all the time, just because it really is the best way to communicate with another external source. And so I guess with that, we're almost ending the hour now. That's all I have for example code, but I do want to emphasize that even though we didn't, I guess at this point, I'm hoping that you're able to open up to set up the installer, which again, better instructions are on the PDF, and so you should be able to open up the installer now, get a Hello World program working, and play around a little bit with the object-oriented programming, and and understand how to use the XML organization that comes off of that. If you have any question at any time, please feel free to email me. Email's on the PDF as well. And as far as next steps, advice going forward, I'd say definitely please draw up your implementation for, if you are considering an Android program for your final project, draw up your design and framework very soon and detail exactly what you want your program to do and how you want users to interact with it, because there are many alternative organizations for most programs that take active user user input. So it's important to nail down at the beginning exactly what the best way is to have those objects communicate with each other. And if you have any question at any time, again, please email me. And thanks a lot. Hope you learned something about the Android platform today. Thanks.